have to ring you. Can you tell me a bit about your mother's parents?
Yes.
My mother's
parents originally came from the Windsor district, but they made a runaway marriage and up to Yorkshire. She was only 18, and the parents were against it, but so they ran away up to Yorkshire, and he got a job as a tutor to some people in the Doncaster area called, I think the name of the people he was tutored to was Ward Oldham or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they lived up in the Doncaster area all their lives, and they've celebrated their 50 years, you know, jubilee, and I think on the whole they were fairly happy, although my grandfather, he was a dear old man, and as I remember him, and he was completely under my grandmother's thumb. He had seven daughters and two sons, and he was dominated by the seven daughters also. His great interests were gardening, loved cats, and he was the church, local church organist for 50 years too. My grandmother, I somehow don't seem to have known so well, but my grandfather, I recognise as a very sweet-natured old man.
So your mother was, where did she come in the family?
She came about in the middle of the girls.
I see.
About in the middle of the family. Mm. And their grandmother still lived in the Windsor district, you see.
I see, yes.
And so there were the girls in they lived in a little village called Wormsworth, which was outside Doncaster. And they never met anybody. There were a few farms round, but they. And so the old lady, the old grandmother down in Windsor, was getting a bit childish. And so. It became a sort of recognised thing to send one of the girls down to look after the grandmother, and she usually met someone down there. The first one, Jessie, came down to Windsor to look after the grandmother and met and married somebody down there. And then Mother...
So the connections are restored in a way. As I understand it, some of her sisters came down
to us. Well, she was the second... of the girls to come down, and she met my father down there. My father lived just out of Clua, just outside Windsor, and one day he was cycling along the streets in Windsor and he fell off his bike. She ran forward and picked him up and bandaged his hand, I think, and he got to know what dancing class she went to, and that was that.
when was this, Peter?
This was about in 1899, something like that.
Yes.
Then he went into printing, and he went into the civil service, into the stationery office. You know.
He was a compositor, was he? Actually,
so setting up. Setting up type. No. To do with paper more, I think.
I see, yes.
And he got a job in the stationery office at Westminster. So my grandfather owned a house in Thornton Heath, and that was my father's father.
Yes.
Owned a house in Thornton Heath, and they came up, when they got married, they came to live in Thornton Heath, you see. And my father used to travel up to town from there.
So they got married.
They got married, yes.
Did your mother have a... I think it wasn't fashionable in those days to have a job at all, was it? She presumably didn't have a job.
She never had a job, no. Mm. She was not actually a highly educated woman. She was an... she always seemed to be groping... I think she was quite intelligent, but she was groping after things without much education behind her, because she was not very well as a child, and her, even though there was a village school, she was nearly always ill and couldn't attend it. So she was not really a well-educated woman, although she spoke well, and she was, as I say, intelligent.
So you feel she was always trying to compensate, or
yes,
to get
I
what
think
she
so.
Not got?
I think so, yes. And when she had several interests, really. She was very interested in theosophy.
Yeah.
For a long time she was a theosophist.
A lot of them were.
She was very interested in anti-vivisection, very much against vivisection, very much indeed. And she was also, for a number of years, a vegetarian. Actually, I became a vegetarian through her influence. For 7 years, I was a vegetarian too. I'm not now. I haven't been for a number of years.
But she wasn't teetotal.
She wasn't teetotal, but I think she didn't look on it with very great favour. I think because of the Rechabite background, you see.
Which was her father's.
Which was her father's background.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. No, she. And poor old man, poor old Grandpa Clements, as at the end of his life, one of the other daughters was looking after him, and up in Yorkshire still. And the doctor said to him, "Oh, I think you ought to have." He got her on one side and said, "I think he ought to have a little sort of whiskey or brandy or something occasionally." And so she said, "Well, he's a Rechabite." So the doctor said, "Oh, well, tell him it's some medicine." And he rather liked it.
But her maiden name was Clements, was it?
And, my mother's maiden name was Clements, yes,
mm.
yes.
Mm. So what did she do? She came down here to Thornton
Heath. She came down to Thornton Heath,
what did
yes.
she do with herself? I mean, of course, you weren't obviously on the scene then. I mean, how did she spend her time?
Her time... It was housework mostly in those days, I think. That was about all a woman had to do, really.
Big house?
Mind you, no, a fairly small house.
So no servants then?
No. Actually, later on, when we appeared on the scene, I say we because I have a brother who is 3.5 years older than I am, and... we did have various maids, you know, to look after us when we were children, you know, sort of take us out for walks and whatnot and do a bit of housework, but no, it wasn't a...
So she had quite a lot to do in that
She
house.
Had quite a lot to do, yes, and there was the shopping. I honestly don't know how she would have spent her time, except that, of course, needlework in those days, I think, took a lot of time.
And housework generally took much longer.
It
anyway,
did, because you didn't have the
no aids and machines.
No, exactly. Yes. You didn't have vacuum cleaners or anything like that.
So anyway, she had your brother and you then.
Yes.
Fairly soon after.
My brother was born about a year after they were married. Mm. And I was born 3.5 years after that.
So that must have kept her busy for
and
a bit.
And that kept her busy, yes, yes. And then I think as my brother eventually went to the Whitgift Grammar, which was in the middle of Croydon then.
Good
it's
school.
Moved out now, yes.
Mm. So your brother went to...
My brother went to the grammar, and
yeah.
I started at a little, as I say, dame school in Thornton Heath called Melbourne College, very grand name for what was really a dame school. But mind you, they, I don't know if you're interested in their method of teaching or anything that, but I got very proficient at French because they used to have a blackboard with pictures of a face and hands, la figure, la tête, la genre, and we had to say, I mean, she pointed at the face, and the head, and the la main, the hand, and I got a very good vocabulary like that because we just had to say it over as she pointed it, and it was really a very good way of getting French vocabulary.
Why did your mother send you there, do you think? I mean, was it the obvious place for
a girl? Then later on I went to a very nice school in Croydon called the Old Palace School, which is still in the centre of Croydon. It was a private school then. It's now trying to sort of remain out of the comprehensive, but it's one of the grant schools. And it was the palace of the Archbishops of Westminster from Saxon times to about 1700, and it's a marvellous old building, and I loved it there. And I didn't go there till I was about 12, and then when I was 15, my mother decided that it was a very cruel decision, really, that I should go to the Croydon High School, which was one of the Girls' Public Day School Trust, and I went from 15 to 8. It was a terrible age to break a child's education, I think. And when I was there, the high school, from 15 to 18, and I hated every moment of it.
Because they were very good schools.
They were good, yes, but I loved the Old Palace, so I didn't want to leave the Old Palace. And the sisters, it was run by Sisters of the Church of England, and teachers, a lot of teachers as well. And I loved the whole, I mean, I was very keen on history always, and I loved the fact that there was a banqueting hall there, and wonderful old banqueting hall still exists there, and the Gallery 1 and Gallery 2 where Queen Elizabeth danced with her courtiers when she came down to see Whitgift. She came down several times to see Archbishop Whitgift.
But looking at it from your mother's point of view, she was doing the best she could.
She was indeed. But I think it was rather a cruel thing to do, rather a mistaken thing to do.
Yes, as it turned out.
Yes. But then, Mother, I'm sorry to have to say it, but Mother had a very cruel streak in her, really.
Did she really?
A very cruel streak. And she used to punish me unmercifully sometimes. Not my brother, but I got punished unmercifully. In fact, I have still a scar on my hand where she opened up my hand once.
Good hand.
And
why? How do you explain this? Looking back over life,
I don't know why. Well, I do know why, because she was, I'm sorry to say it, for many years very mentally unbalanced. Later on. Very, I think it was due to that more than anything else. I was not really very fond of my mother, I'm sorry to say, until she became helpless towards the end of her life, and then that's the only time I really cared for her at all.
Because when you look at her, she looks rather fierce, doesn't she, in a way, in that
picture? Yes, yes.
With very tight mouth and so on.
Yes, yes, yes. She had a very cruel part of her nature. And she really, when she married Father, she really married him for a husband and children and a home. There was no love on her side, but there was a lot of love on Father's side.
Good heavens.
A lot of love.
Yes. How was she as a mother then? I mean, getting to the very earliest recollections you have. I mean, she was very strict then, was she, with both of you, or particularly with you?
No, with me. Not with my brother, no.
Hmm. That's extraordinary, isn't it?
But, she looked after us all right, of course. I mean, she made most of our clothes. I mean, that probably is one of the occupations that she spent her time
in. Yes.
She even made my brother a suit, I remember. Mm. But,
so she was very good in the formal sense of providing for you, and making sure you were properly clothed, looked after. And she cooked for you, I suppose, did she? Oh, yes, indeed. So,
yes.
Really, from the point of view of affection, really, that she wasn't good, is that right? I mean,
well, she had plenty of affection for my brother,
but
not for me. Mm-hmm. Not for me. The main thing about her, as far as I was concerned, was that she was she tried to dominate me, and I was a bit of a strong character myself, and I didn't want to be dominated and dictated to, and she tried very much to dictate to me. I think, looking back, it's rather ridiculous that she should have taken me up to these as early as say 7 or 9, whatever I was, to all these Women's Freedom League.
Do you think meetings. She was ambitious for you?
Yes, I think she was. Yes, mm. I think she would have liked me to have been a doctor, but of course in those days women weren't doctors.
Or to do something.
Or to do something like that. Yes, I do think she was. She was ambitious for both of us, and actually. My brother got on very well. He retired as a colonel, but he went into the Indian Army. He's a retired colonel, Indian Army colonel, living Claygate now. But I went into the Bank of England. I mean, we weren't a rich family, and I had to earn my living when I grew up. And I had the chance of going into the Bank of England, which was a good job.
As what, actually?
On the clerical side, and but I didn't make. I am a pensioner of the Bank of England, actually. I was in it 30 years. But it was a very frustrating existence. You know, I never saw any end product.
So the cog in the machine.
So
you think that your mother, in a sense, sent you to the GPDST school partly because she wanted you to get on and to give you every opportunity.
I think so. Yes, yes, I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that.
But she realised you weren't happy there, that didn't affect her at all.
That didn't matter.
Yes.
I mean, she knew I didn't want to leave the Old Palace School. And even one of the sisters, my history mistress, my form mistress, Sister Rosemary, came right from Croydon to Thornton Heath, which is it's about 3 miles. She came out to see Mother to implore her not to break my education and take me away from the Old Palace.
But the fact that you didn't want to go, in a sense, made your mother grit her teeth and
yes. There was no, I had no say in it whatsoever. They were paying the school fees, and that was that. And my father was always under my mother's thumb.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. I mean, he was very fond of her, you say.
He was very fond of her, and and she treated him sometimes very abominably.
Did she really, what sort of, not really doing what wives did in those days?
No. The way she looked down on him and sometimes spoke to him, in...
Depreciating.
Yes.
Hmm. What sort of reaction did he show then when she was treating you badly or being rather unkind to you? Did he back you up? Or
on the particular day that... No, I don't think he had quite the character to sort of really stand up for me too much. But he was not... I don't think he ever hit us or hurt us in any way. But Mother used to buy those penny canes, and it was one of these penny canes that we were sent round to the shop round the corner to get one of these penny canes about once a week. And it was one of these that I can still see the scar on the back of her hand there. And he was actually in the house at the time when she hit me so badly that it opened up that hand, and I felt faint, and I lay on the settee, and my father sort of fussed around me, but mother couldn't have cared less. She thought I was putting it on.
What sort of things made her cross then, Peter? I mean, did she just ordinary childish things, or was there anything particular that made her especially cross with you, do you think?
No.
Really, when you were sort of, your wills were conflicting.
Yes. I can't think of any particular instance.
Mm.
But she used to terrify me because she had a sort of rather staring glare sometimes. Do this, you know, and sort of look at me in such a way that it really frightened me sometimes.
Mm.
So I usually did try to do as I was told, but not always, it depends.
Mm. Anyway,
But I say she was mentally unbalanced. You see, at the end of her life, she became very mentally unbalanced, and she died actually in a mental hospital not very far from here called Netham. But that was much later on.
And you think that you can see that all the way through, really? It's only just an extension of what
see it all the way
there.
Through, yes. It was a mental failing, yes.
Anyway, turning to more pleasant things, how did your father get on in his job? I mean, was he always in the same job all the time, or did he move up?
He didn't. He had the chance of a quite good promotion if he moved from London to South Wales, and this was much later in his career. Mother said no, she wasn't going to move from London, and he had to turn it down, so he never got very far, really.
But anyway, you feel he wouldn't have pushed, he wasn't the type to push anyway.
No, he wasn't the type to push, no, he wasn't.
So did she sort of criticise him for that aspect of his personality? I mean, was that what she used to get at him about?
I know she used to get at him, but...
And was she trying to push him on, do you think?
No, I don't think that. I don't think she was ambitious for him. She was ambitious for us, but not for him, I don't think.
Mm.
Don't think so. Mm. And of course, she was very proud when my brother went into the Indian Army, and he got on. And she was proud that, I mean, I didn't do, I mean, to get into the Bank of England was quite a good job in those days. And
What happened? You finished at the GPDST, and you presumably got through your exams and things.
I didn't. I failed matric twice.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to have matric. It was in mathematics. I could never do mathematics, so I went into a bank.
But did she try to get you to follow any particular career, or did she?
No.
How did you
no.
choose that particular one?
Well, it was my father knew somebody. You had to have a director's nomination in those days to get into the bank at all. And father knew somebody through the stationery office that could get me a director's nomination, and it was he who got me the job in the bank.
I see.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was nothing.
So
to do
it wasn't
with
really
money,
to do with her at
no,
all.
No, nothing to do with her at all.
Yes. Well, that gets us started. Shall we have lunch?
Yes. All right. Yes. Well, she used to read a lot.
Did she?
She used to read. Particularly the Review of Reviews. You've probably heard of
W.T.
Stead, yes. Because he went down in the Titanic.
That's right.
And but she used to take a lot of her ideas and a lot of her opinions, I think, from the Review of Reviews. I think so. Because, as I say, she was not really a very well-educated woman, but I think she was... That the Review of Reviews more or less had a very important influence with her.
What were her politics actually, Vida? Was she liberal or conservative? Or
well, you see, in those
really
days, they didn't have any, you know.
What about your father? I mean,
My father, I would say, was conservative. I would say so, yes.
What about religion? Were they... She was... Her family was Church of England, wasn't it?
Yes, her... my grandpa, Clements, he was, as I say, the local organist at the Church of England little church in Walmsworth, which has now been pulled down, but... when my cousins and I went up, it was disgrace, really, the churchyard. All the gravestones broken, you couldn't see where the graves were or anything. Mm. It was dreadful. And the church no longer standing there.
But your father was Church of England
He
as
was
well,
Church of
he?
England. Oh, yes, he was very much Church of England. He was a sidesman at St. Paul's, I think it was, Thornton Heath. And he did a lot of sort of social work for the church.
Did he really? What sort of things? I mean,
well, it was not a very affluent neighbourhood, and he used to, there was a coal club and that sort of thing, and he used to help run that, and used to go and see people. He was very good in doing that kind
of. Did your mother join in on that, really?
I don't think she did. Mm. I don't think so. But he did. I know that... he was quite a live wire in the church, and it was a church warden, and
so she went to church with him, did she?
Oh yes, I mean, and we went to Sunday school on Sundays too, Sunday afternoons. I think it was get us out of the way as much as anything.
You can be a Theosophist and go to an Anglican church.
Oh
as well.
yes. I think the Theosophy came a bit later than, she certainly went to church with us. And
there's something sort of rather ironic about your mother. I mean, you say she's got the streak of cruelty in her, and yet she's very keen on anti-vivisection.
Yes, and yet, I don't know whether she was so fond of animals, although, I don't know. Yes, I think she was fond of animals, yes. Because we used to keep chickens, and she thought it was very good for us to see the chickens coming out of the eggs, and, to see the little chicken pecking its way out. And although she's very funny as far as sex education was concerned, I mean, she... When my brother was about 18 and just about to go out to India, she started talking about the birds and the bees.
But she, you really feel she wanted your affection?
I think so, yes. I do think so. And she wasn't getting it, and she couldn't understand why. And yet she was so domineering and so, intolerant, I would say, that no child ever would have responded with affection in that case, I don't think. It's a pity, but I think that is so.
Was she a nice-looking woman, really? I mean, you say your father had this broken nose, which spoiled what would otherwise be a very nice-looking appearance, really.
Yes.
She looks as if she dresses rather grandly in that. I don't know.
That was very early days.
Mm.
Yeah, I've got some other photographs. She always looked all right, and I won't say she wasn't sort of.
She didn't make a great thing of
make a great thing of dress, but she made a lot of her own clothes, and was quite clever at that.
What about housework generally? Was she bored by housework, do you think, or did she just do it without complaining?
I think she didn't do as much as... one or two people used to say that that our house was dirty, that... there used to be a lot of fluff under the beds and that sort of thing, and I think that it was rather hastily done and not always well done.
I suppose she thought quite rightly that there are more important things
That's
to do.
Quite
than
rightly,
constant
I think
dusting.
So too. I mean, a little bit of dust here and there doesn't always drive me into breakdown.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But did she? You didn't feel she resented housework particularly?
Oh no,
I mean,
no,
wasn't any
no,
fighting
no,
against
no,
it.
No, no,
yes.
no.
Anyway, do carry on with what you've got there, because you've obviously got it, a lot of it written down.
Well, as far as the theosophy was concerned, I remember she took me up to a lecture by Annie Besant. Do you?
Yes, yeah, she's very prominent.
Yes,
yeah.
In London. And she was introducing a poet called Rabindranath Tagore. You must have heard of him too. I must have been about 12 at the time, but Annie Besant was a very good lecturer, marvellous woman, really. And I know that even at that age, I pricked up my ears. It was the first time I'd ever heard of anything like United States of Europe, and that she actually, I remember that at this lecture she spoke about having the United States of Europe. Well, I thought it was a marvellous idea, and I do remember that.
And she was an inspiring speaker, really.
She was an inspiring speaker, she certainly was. Yes, I remember her well.
What made your mother a theosophist, do you think? Do you remember why she became one, or do you remember how it happened?
I don't know. She used to come out with funny little things. She'd say, she said once to me, she said, "I'm a young spirit, but you're an old one." She said, what was it? I think I said to her once, she asked me what I understood from theosophy, and I said, "Well, you go into one body and you get tired, and the body gets worn out, and then you go into another, and that's what forever and ever means," some sort of nonsense like that. But that was, people would say rather peculiar ideas about some things. I mean, she would look at I remember we had some hyacinths on the kitchen windowsill, and she said she could see the aura of these flowers, and she described the colouring of the aura. But then I think she'd been reading a book about theosophy and about the aura of the individual, and I think she was sort of thinking of the flowers, applying what she'd read, yes.
Why do you think she became a theosophist? Was she always, was it part of her hunting for explanations and trying to push her education?
I think she probably read something in the reviews.
Yes.
I think that she was, she used to quote things, I think, from the reviews. She took a lot of her thinking from the reviews, and I expect it had an article about theosophy, and I expect that started her off, but I really don't know.
So did she go to meetings or read books or what?
I think she went to a few meetings. She certainly read books about theosophy, yes.
Mm.
But it sort of died out eventually.
Did it? I mean, how long afterwards do you think? I mean,
I wouldn't like to say.
It lasted a few years,
yes. Same as her interest in anti-vivisection. I think that sort of died out eventually. And of course, she stopped being a vegetarian too.
Did she?
Yes. But I think she stopped after I did. But I said,
was she always taking things up? I mean, did she pick up one thing and drop another?
No, she was running them more or less the same time, really. Certainly the theosophy, anti-vivisection and vegetarianism were at the same time.
I see, so she dropped them all, really, after a bit.
More or less, yes. But then that was because I think, you know, her mental powers were going a bit. And during the last war, we used to live in a bigger house the other end of this road, near the Downs. And in 1937, Mum and Father were always quarrelling, and in 1937 I nearly had a nervous breakdown because of the constant quarrelling at home, and I was the sort of buttress in between. And so I went to my doctor and asked him for advice, and he said, get somewhere on your own. So I did. I got a flat in Croydon, and I told them I was moving out of Westwood Road, where we lived then. So father took it quite well. Mother was absolutely furious. She wouldn't let me take anything from home. I had £150 saved, and I had to spend all that on furnishing this flat that I'd taken in Croydon. I wasn't allowed to take my own bedding. I wasn't even allowed to take a rusty frying pan from the garage. She wouldn't let me take a thing from home. Not a thing. And so I set up this little flat in Croydon in 1937. Well, there was nothing to keep them from quarrelling all the time, and so they broke up, and father came to me. Mother started on a very tragic lot of sort of going from pillar to post, and you know, boarding houses and hotels and whatnot. And in 1939, we were living, my flat was very near Croydon Aerodrome, and I realised the war was coming. I realised that there wouldn't be a health resort. Also realised that Mother, who had gone down to Bournemouth by this time, was trekking about. Nobody would keep her for very long. And I decided that, I said to Father, you know, we'll have to have Mother home. She's not mentally capable of carrying on any longer on her own. We'll have to have her home. So Father found a little house in Old Lodge Lane, which is Purley, in the spring of 1939. And I gave up my flat, and we moved in there, and we had Mother home with us. But of course it wasn't for very long. I mean, this was March 1939, and then of course in the autumn of that year the war came. Well, I was in the Bank of England, and they decided that my part of the bank would have to be evacuated to Whitchurch. It was the sort of warrant side, the not the cash part, it was the other side. And they'd got a place called Whitchurch in Hampshire, and they would evacuate the staff there. And so when the war broke out, we had to remain on call and somebody from the key people in various districts would phone through and say whether we were to go down to Whitchurch immediately or when we were to go down. And after about a week, I was one of the first people to go down to Whitchurch. This was a week after the war broke out, I went down there. And Mother and Father were, meanwhile, Father was looking after Mother in a boarding house in Bournemouth at that time. And so I said, look, I've got to go down to Whitchurch and I've got to be evacuated there. You better stay on at Bournemouth for the moment because you're safer there. So I packed up the house, you know, and put strips down the window to keep the glass from breaking and that sort of thing. Put mothballs in the blankets and shut the house up, and went down to Whitchurch after a week. And of course it was very peaceful down there, no raids or anything. But after a few months, when the sort of the phony war was over and the war started in earnest, and Mum and Father decided to come back to Old Lodge Lane. So every other weekend I was allowed home and had a railway pass to come home and see my parents. You see, well, my word, did I work at those weekends. I went back to Whitchurch to have a rest cure, because Father did his, I mean, he was over 70 then, and Mother died when she was 69, but she'd be about 67 then, I'm talking about. And But she didn't know there was a war, and she didn't know, you know, when there was a raid, she thought it was potatoes on the roof. She'd say, potatoes on the roof, and she had no idea at all of what was happening or anything. And but I looked after them as best I could every other weekend, you see, and wore myself out pretty nearly. And eventually, Mother kept on breaking the blackout, leaving doors and windows streaming with the light going out, walking along in the middle of the road, nearly getting run over by the little bus that ran along Old Arch Lane. And so, in the end, she had to go into Nethern, which was up on the hill, about 2 or 3 miles over that way, and where she died eventually, you know, after about a year. But after she'd died, this was the middle of the war, I kept on having the most pathetic letters from Father. I still came home at every other weekend to see him, but of course he was living on his own there then, and he was very lonely and in his 70s. So I said, I think I'd better apply to come back to head office. So I applied to come back to head office, although I was very happy down there and didn't really want to come back to head office. But at the same time, I had him to look after. So I applied to come back, and they sent me to an exchange control office up in London, where I saw the end of the war and missed some bombs there. One morning, when I came back to exchange control, one morning I missed one that hit Cannon Street Station, and I was in King William Street Post Office. I was the only, it was 8:40 in the morning, and I was the only person in the post office, and there was a girl clerk behind the counter. We heard this, it was a doodlebug. Heard this doodlebug coming over, and we heard it cut out. We knew, of course, it was coming down immediately. So she grabbed the cash, I think, and ran round from behind the counter and said, "You better come down to the cellar with me." We were halfway down the steps when the thing went off at Cannon Street, and when we came back into the King William Street Post Office, the whole place was black with what looked like black smoke. But it wasn't. It was the dust of years that had been shaken up by this bomb. Then I made my way to Threadneedle Street through all broken glass, you know, all in the streets. And going into Threadneedle Street, I saw a friend of mine who had just been coming out of Cannon Street at that identical moment when the thing went off. But she fortunately wasn't hurt, but she looked as if she was gone grey from head to foot, covered with grey dust. And that was 8:40 in the morning. 9:20, two of our fire watchers were up on the roof, and a girl, you know, the air raid sort of squad, and they had an alarm up there. And they used to, the National Police, this is interesting, I think, though it's nothing to do with suffragettes, but it's interesting. Opposite the Bank of England, they had there was a National Provincial, I think it was, office, or one of the other offices, had what looked like a storm mast, and they used to run like a storm signal up if they knew that this doodlebug was coming in a straight line for the middle of the city, you see. And these three on the roof there saw this thing being hauled up to the top of the mast, and so they did the immediate alert. Well, of course, I was on the second floor, there was no time. Once you got down into the vaults, you were safe. But there was no time to get down to the vault, so I was under a table on the second floor when the thing went off, and it didn't. The girl who pressed the knob on the roof thought it was the last thing she'd ever do. But as it came, it was coming directly for the bank, and then one wing tipped, and it went just across the road, corner of Princess Street, just at the opposite corner, which was a building we'd taken over for our staff, and it killed three of our staff there. But it didn't actually land on the bank.
How did your father cope with all this? I mean, he was living by himself. Well, you were coming back in the evening.
I was coming back in the evenings, yes, yes. And, I had a shelter put up in the garden, and I rigged it all up and, made it more or less habitable. But he did get rather fed up with it. And he said he thought he'd go down to Bournemouth for a holiday. And so most of the time I stopped using the shelter. I used the house most of the time and slept in there on my own. And he went down to Bournemouth and he met somebody in a cafe there and decided to get married again. But it didn't work out. Even the second marriage didn't work out. And after a bit he wanted to come back to me, but by that time I only had one bedroom accommodation. I had to find him accommodation in various places, but eventually he lost his memory terribly badly and was roaming all over the place. So one time I was called to Streatham police station and he didn't know where he was. You see, we used to live over that way and he tried to find his way over there. And eventually I had to put him into quite a good old people, well, not an old people, it was a nursing home really in Purley where he died.
So you really had all the responsibility for your parents?
Well, I did really, because my brother was in India, yes. I had the whole responsibility the whole time, yes.
It's rather a tragic story, the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, it is really, yes.
Not just your mother, but the whole thing.
Yes. As I say, I told you it might be rather tragic going, but
yes.
There's nothing confidential about it. Anything you want to say, I don't.
Yes. Could we go back to the suffrage days? I mean,
yes.
I'm obviously interested in that particularly, but in what happened afterwards as well.
Yes.
I mean, your mother really wanted you to become a suffragette, did she? I mean, she was taking you along.
But of course, I was much too young.
Yes.
And I don't think I honestly ever really cared very much about it.
No.
She wanted to go to these meetings and it was the thing to do, and I suppose I went along with her.
What happened? There wasn't a branch at first in Thornton Heath, was there?
Not immediately, but...
Because you talk about the idea of one being established after the Emily Davison procession.
Yes. I think it must have been in existence from that advertiser thing. I think it must have been in existence at the time. But I did want to tell you this about the, which is rather an interesting sidelight on the Emily Davidson business, that, of course, news didn't travel very well, very quickly in those days. And every year, my father and a colleague of his always took a legitimate day off to go to the Derby. And we knew of the Emily Davidson episode long before it came, onto the papers or anything, because they were standing very near and they saw this woman go down under the King's horse. And they came home very shaken in the evening, because this friend always came back with father and they had supped together. And they after the Derby day, and they were, very shaken with what they'd seen at the races. But that was how we first knew of it.
But your mother, was she sort of official in the local branch of the Women's
Union? I don't think she was actually an official. No, I don't think so. But she used to. Most of the speakers came down there. I don't remember the names of most of the speakers, except there was a Madame Malmberg, I think. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they were very well-known people. And they nearly always stayed at our house. And that was on that occasion when I wrote about there. The police, because we were only just round the corner from Thornton Heath Clock, we could have walked it in 5 minutes to home, whereas from Selhurst Station it was quite a little walk. But at the same time the police thought it was much simpler
for us to go from to Selhurst and then walk back from there to our house.
So there were meetings under the clock, were there?
Yeah, well, at the clock. It's the clock in Thornton Heath. It's a big, a fairly big clock, about twice the height of this room, and it's got steps round it, and it was quite a good meeting place, really. And
did your mother speak at these meetings, or?
I don't think so, no. Mm. Father used to go along, but not because he was particularly interested in suffrage, but just to look after Mother, I think. And then she had, I don't know what his name was, but there was a little man. Father was not very tall, but this little man was only about under 5 foot, I should think. And he had an awful stammer, and he constituted himself Mother's protector in chief. And he came up to her one time, I remember, and said to her, "If anybody touches you, I'll kill them." And Mother was a big woman. Yes.
But there was quite a lot of violence, was there?
There was, yes, there was. Not at the Caxton Hall ever, because I think they had a lot of male helpers who sort of guarded the door and that sort of thing. But the clock, it was quite a rough element in parts of Thornton Heath, and still is. Although it's an Indian community now, really.
Did your mother ever get injured herself, or
no?
No,
never. No.
But I think you said that when you went to Caxton Hall, Mrs. Despard always used to kiss you.
Yes, yes, she did.
Why did she do that?
Well, I think because I was sort of the youngest, by far the youngest person who ever went there to these meetings, and I think she made a thing of it.
She's a very motherly woman.
She's a very nice woman, what I remember of her, and a very, very aristocratic kind.
Yes, a very stately woman, with that mantilla.
Yes.
So did your mother know her quite well? Presumably she did, if she
I think so.
Yes. No doubt I could find your mother's name in the subscription lists and things like that.
I expect. I don't really know whether, yes, of going that far.
But she never had arguments with your father about that.
No.
They both were in favour of both women.
No. But it wasn't a happy childhood because they were always quarrelling. Brother was quite glad to get to India.
Was he?
Yes.
What sort of things did they quarrel about? Just anything, really, was it? Or were the specific things they tended to quarrel about?
I think so, just anything. Yes. They were as different as chalk and cheese. Father was always a complete optimist, and Mother was always a complete pessimist. But it wasn't a case of Jack Sprat can eat no fat and his wife can eat no lean. They never said, they never agreed, even though they took opposite sides.
And yet she was in favour of votes for women, which is an optimistic cause, really, in a way.
I suppose so, yes. But I would have said on her general outlook on everything was pessimistic, whereas my father's was not. My father had a happier side, really.
What happened in the First War? Did your father go off?
No, it was a reserved occupation.
Oh, I see.
Because, you see, he was... they were printing all sorts of government, propaganda and that sort of thing. And I don't think he ever wanted to go. I don't know. I don't think so. But anyway, he wasn't allowed to. It was a reserved occupation.
What did your mother think about things like makeup or, the women's appearance generally?
I don't know that she ever said very much about it.
She didn't sort of obviously not use makeup or anything like that. I mean,
it wasn't a thing that she had a strong view about.
But she joins these vegetarian groups and
no, just
group?
no.
As far as the anti-vivisection was concerned, it was mostly distributing leaflets, but whether she went to meetings or not, I can't remember. Mm. Vegetarianism, she just gave it up on principle. She thought it was wrong to eat, that we're animals and the animals are animals, and it's wrong to... It's sort of almost cannibalistic.
Yes, so you were all made to give up?
Not Malcolm and my brother and my father would never, they were.
I see, so she didn't force that on them?
No. But whether, I don't think she actually forced it on me. I think she sort of talked to me that, you know, it was wrong to eat animals, and perhaps I thought for a time it was.
Did she have friends much? I mean, was she
not
popular?
Not many. No, not very popular, no. Mm. No. I would say she didn't have a great many friends.
Because she looks, in her photograph, almost bitter, doesn't she?
Yeah.
In that pursed sort of mouth of hers. She doesn't look a happy woman.
No, I don't think she was a happy woman, actually. Mm.
But she was very fond of your brother, anyway.
There were two loves in Mother's life. It wasn't Father. But one was her son, Malcolm, my brother. And the other one was my nephew in Cambridge, John. You see, when John was born, he was born out in India, in Secunderabad, and when he was about 3, they came home on leave, and he had tropical sores all in his arms and legs, and the doctor said, oh, he should be left behind, you know, not go back to India at the time being. So he was with us, with my mother and father and myself, and up at the other house, the other, you know, up near the Downs. And he's a dear little boy, and I used to bath him and put him to bed. And anyway, he got over this tropical sore trouble. And of course, Tony, the next leave they came home, they took a farm down at King's Weir? Down near Dartmouth, and Tony, my younger nephew, was born in Brixham Hospital.
And she took to the elder boy?
The elder boy, John, who was with us those years. That was the two people she really loved in life, Malcolm and John.
So did she spoil them, or how did she behave with them?
No, when John sometimes, she tried to punish him when he hadn't done anything particularly. I mean, that's why I think she had rather a cruel, sadistic streak, although she loved the little boy. She'd punish him for things that there wasn't anything to punish for. Mm. And several times I had to absolutely stick up for him against her. But that, I think, again, was this mental strength.
Yes, it was something
yes,
wrong.
Yes, yes.
But you said she was always, in a sense, trying to, early on, you said she was trying to sort of find out things. She'd never had a proper education. What else did she do, then, apart from join movements and things? Did she try...
Apart from reading, I don't think she did anything very much besides that.
And in a sense, I suppose, get what she hadn't got through her children to some extent.
Yes,
by making
possibly,
sure they
yes,
did well.
Yes, she certainly was. She was, she did want us to get on, I'm sure of that.
Mm.
Yes.
Is there anything else about her you think that would bring out her personality apart from what we've discussed? We've discussed most.
I think we have, but I think I've come almost to the end of my notes.
Yes, if there's anything else on your notes, do.
I don't think there is, really. I mentioned about you knew about Sylvia Pankhurst
already.
Yes,
I did, yes. Yes. And you remember this business of Emily Davison's The Wreath and so on that you wrote?
Oh, yes.
And you really did this because you wanted to.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was entirely spontaneous. Mm. I mean, she had no idea until I thrust this. I went into the garden and picked a little bunch of flowers and then wrote this out, tied it onto the bunch of flowers and thrust it into her hands as she was about to go off, you see. Okay. And I suppose that she was rather touched by it, and she must have torn that small bit off. Because she certainly left the flowers on Emily Davison's grave.
Did she admire the Pankhurst, you know? I mean, because you see, the Women's Freedom League's quite separate from the Pankhurst organisation. Did she talk about the Pankhurst?
No, I don't think she did. I don't think she did. I think she was rather sort of anti any sort of militant.
Was she?
I would say she was anti-militant, yes.
Because on the whole, the Women's Freedom League is relatively moderate by comparison.
Yes, oh yes, it was, I think. Yes, it was. I must try and find that those, I would like you to see those photographs.
Yes, I'd love.